love with the area and thought, if I ever stop, this would be a good place to settle down, which after a few more years, I did.
Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. Today, my guest is Nathan Barnett, who's perhaps best known around town as the owner of the Old Consulate Inn and the force behind the Steampunk Festival. But he's here today because of a different event, the return of the Haunted Bordello. So now that I've teased you with that, let's welcome Nathan to the show.
Thanks so much, Marianne. Great to be here.
Delighted to have you. So we're going to get around to the bordellos, or the fictional ones at least, in a few minutes. But first, I want our listeners to get to know you. So going back to your beginnings, are you a local boy born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Alas, no. I hail from the heartland of Ohio.
And what did your folks do?
Both English teachers. It's kind of the family business.
Okay. And siblings, did you have any?
I've got a slew of brothers, a full brother, a half brother, and two stepbrothers.
Okay. No girls, huh?
No girls. They're still a mystery to me.
Well, that's how it goes sometimes. So were you one of those rare kids who had it all mapped out? You know, I'm going to graduate from high school and I'm going to do X.
Not a chance. Mine was a rather circuitous path.
Okay, well, your folks being English teachers, they probably expected you to go on to higher education.
I was always bookish, so it was nobody's surprise that I did roll right into college after a brief stint in the Army.
Did the Army take you to exciting places?
Wow. Is Fayetteville, North Carolina, or the Riverwalk of Texas? No, not bad, but I did not go abroad.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good news and bad news, I would say.
I did get activated for Desert Storm, but I was deployed within the U.S. to backfill and to provide blood. I was a med tech, so I helped draw bags of blood, much like the Red Cross. And so, that blood went abroad without
me. So did that influence you to get into the medical profession?
I was thinking about pre-med, which is the reason I signed up. And then I found out just how tough medicine can be and went scampering back to academia.
Okay. And so you got done with the Army, went back to school. Get any degrees?
I did. I took a double major in English and psychology. And then after another hiatus, went back and took a master's in literature.
And did you indeed get a job in that field?
I worked for a bit. I worked at Seattle Central Community College for about 3 years as an adjunct English prof, which was great fun, but terrible pay.
Yeah. So what'd you do next?
A lot of stops and starts, but I ended up in tech.
Wait a minute. What about when you were on a cruise ship? Tell me about that.
That was before I got to Seattle Central.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So after decided to leave academics,
right.
Looked around at my professors, and most of them weren't loving their jobs. So I decided I would go do something else, but I wasn't sure what that was. So I grabbed a backpack of clothes and started traveling. I lived in Colorado for a while. I went abroad, I taught English in Japan for a year, then signed on as you mentioned, I did bartending everywhere. Always a great skill to have. So I had bartended on a cruise ship, and that brought me to the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, and specifically where in the Pacific Northwest?
I started off on Bainbridge Island.
Why there?
There was, my now wife had a house there.
How convenient.
When I'd gotten off the cruise ships and was still traveling, she said, if you ever need a place, you know, she was on the ships for 2 months working as the hotel manager, for the ships. there was a place that I could settle in. So I used that as a starting point in the Northwest as I transitioned from a guy with a backpack of clothes to somebody who was, you know, eventually going to settle.
And how did you manage to get to tech from that?
That is another interesting story. Originally, it was a blind date. Yeah.
With Bill Gates?
No, but actually, it was about 2000, and that was a weird time in technology where they were desperate for people, even people who didn't happen to own a computer or really know how to use one.
Wow.
But I did show up with a lot of language skills, and so they asked me to write their manuals and edit things, and it went from there. Eventually, it went beautifully. I always say I won the lottery. After another circuitous route, ended up being hired by Microsoft as a technical writer.
Cool.
And made my career there. I've been doing technical writing for it's coming up on 20 years now.
Okay, so you were on Bainbridge, and then you transitioned to being a tech writer, and did you stay living on Bainbridge, or did...
Moved over to Seattle.
Yeah.
And, you
a little
know,
more
but
convenient,
worked,
I suppose.
Of course, yeah. Worked in... out of Redmond, but always preferred the city.
Okay. So how did you end up getting to Port Townsend?
That same wonderful woman, Cindy Madsen, was a hotel manager and had been a chef and all these other fantastic skills. We always thought that a bed and breakfast would be neat, but doing that in the city was prohibitively expensive. So we were looking around, and some dear friends in Port Townsend sent us a flyer and said, "Hey, saw this and thought of you. Bed and breakfast for sale." That wasn't the old Consulate Inn, but it did get us thinking. We came over and started shopping around, and after some high adventure in both finance and house hunting, we decided it was the perfect place. Old Consulate Inn. It had grape leaves and... she'd always worked in the wine industry, so it was a very clear, wonderful landing for us. We've loved the city.
And so what year did you buy the old consulate?
That was 2011.
And you immediately opened it as a bed and breakfast?
We signed the papers, moved in, and the next morning served breakfast for 16.
Wow. So, you know, everyone knows the name of the old consulate, but does that mean it really was a consulate? What's the history of that building?
Interestingly enough, it was a consulate for, depending on which source you read, anywhere from a year and a half to 4 years. But it was an interesting situation. The owners certainly were not involved with Germany. They were actually Norwegians.
And wait, who built it? When was it built?
Well,
start there.
It was built in 1889 by Frank Hastings, one of the sons of Lauren and Lucinda Hastings.
Founding fathers.
Indeed. And so it was built on spec, probably stood empty for years. And then in 1904, it was sold on spec, or sold on, to cover back taxes. So Port Townsend had already failed to become the hub of industry to which it aspired.
Right.
But so Frank basically lost the house. It was bought by a family that finished it, and they immediately took on boarders, one of whom was eventually asked by the Germans to serve as a vice consulate and provide paperwork and help sailors, especially who are coming through and maybe needed some legal assistance or guidance on how to, or just somebody who spoke German, I guess.
Yeah, that would be handy.
Yeah.
Okay, so it technically never really was a consulate. It was just called it.
The Germans considered it to have been a consulate. And when the house was put on the National Registry in the 1970s, they just put everything on the paperwork by way of application. And the thing that stood out for the Department of the Interior was this building had once been a consulate for Germany. Well, that's interesting. We'll put that on the big brass plaque.
Okay.
And from the other side of the country, it became recognized as the German consulate.
Okay. So over the years, it largely has been a B&B, right?
Well, it was a family home from 1910. All the way up into the 1980s, most recently, the Dobbenberger family, who are still around. I have lots of friends or acquaintances who come up and say, I used to hang out there and play as a kid. It became a B&B in the 80s, and it's been consistently a B&B since.
Okay. When When you two took it over, you still were doing your tech writing, right?
I am to this day.
So you must be doing some, some remote work, but some commuting over to Seattle.
Absolutely, yeah. I still work out of an office in South Lake Union.
So one of the things that some of our listeners may know about you is your involvement with the Steampunk Festival.
Yeah.
When did that start here? And I should just note for our listeners, steampunk is actually practiced or done all over the world. There are festivals in many, many cities. So tell us about Port Townsend's event.
Absolutely. So it was 2012. We'd been here barely a year and decided we were working with the Chamber of Commerce, and they were looking for more events that would be great, especially for younger people, more dress up, more fun. So I'd done steampunk events in Seattle before moving over, and the combination of the amazing artists that we have here in town, along with our amazing history, the great buildings, it was just such a perfect setting that it was really a no-brainer. I walked in, I was like, why isn't anybody doing this already? steampunk had been a popular genre for, this is 2012, it'd been around for decades already.
Explain, what is steampunk?
Sure. Steampunk is an aesthetic. It's a cultural genre. Let's see, a literary genre, I think, originally. So Victorian science fiction, think Jules Verne, 2,000 Leagues Beneath the Sea, or Frankenstein, we think of as a horror, but also it's this idea of mad scientists building new, magnificent, strange new things. But in the modern era, steampunk becomes a hearkening back to the Victorian, but not hindered by real history. So it's playful, it's whimsical. Nobody's going to tell you you're doing it wrong because it's completely fantasy driven, but it's no diesel, no petroleum. It's what happens if we had taken a turn as we started using internal combustion engines and kept everything pretty much arts and crafts. So craftspeople still making beautiful things. The 19th century had its slew of cultural problems, but we still made things with our hands. And there was still an awareness of aesthetic that, we probably mid-century, we were mass producing everything. What if we still made everything individually?
So Port Townsend's steampunk event is usually held in the summer. When?
Usually second weekend of June.
Okay.
So next year, the 14th through the 16th.
It's very much a dress-up event, shall we call it? And can you describe what you wear or what Cindy wears so we have an idea?
Right. So if you've ever been to the Victorian Festival or been downtown when it was on, you have dapper chaps in top hats and ladies in long flowing dresses. And steampunk emphasizes the punk. This is the lower class, less schmancy folk out on the streets. So it's a little more rough and tumble. They're more bowlers, which was the working class hat, by the way, back in the day. It was originally the workman's hat.
Did not know that.
Wow. So it was actually the original hard hat, because you could get hit on the head with one and it didn't. It was a protective layer. But it's playful. People run around with gadgets they've made. Almost everybody, I shouldn't say everybody who comes to steampunk is an artist. I'm not. I make events. Other people make beautiful things. But so many people who get involved do it because it's a creative outlet for their artistic creations. So they'll have weird gadgets and gizmos. They'll have ray guns and people fashion pets or mechanical contrivances. Somebody walked around with an entire tea service on a backpack. And they pushed a button and it distributed tea with cream or sugar all mechanically. So just whimsical, funny things.
Yeah. And so what did you wear?
I generally wear a custom made tail coat in black leather.
Nice.
I play the posh pseudo mayor of of the Brass Screw Consortium. So I'm a little upscale, but I still, it's leather instead of nice wool or silk, and a little more cocky.
Okay. And I guess there would be duels.
There are all kinds of adventures, kind of worked into the event, and dueling is definitely one of them. If you fall into the right circle, you get challenged to a T-duel, which is...
What's a T-duel?
Yes. I'll square off with you with a steely eye, with a cup of tea and a biscuit. And you dip that biscuit into your tea, and the last person still holding an intact cookie and gets it cleanly into their mouth wins the duel. It's a test of nerve.
But so the other person is what, using a sword?
They're both holding tea. And one cup hand holds the cup of tea,
right?
The other the biscuit.
Right.
We each dips the biscuit at a count.
Yeah.
And then they hold the biscuit before them as it gets soggier and soggier as the tea makes it want to collapse.
Yeah.
And the goal is to get it cleanly into your mouth. And frequently it falls apart in your hand, or it starts to go, and then you throw it into your mouth and your opponent manages to wait longer and then gets their cookie cleanly into their mouth. That's the winner. The last person standing wins the tea duel.
Okay. Do they get anything other than bragging rights if they win?
It's a weekend-long competition where we are split into factions of... There are pirates, steampunk pirates... There's the steampunk posh people, the aetherists. They're the outcasts who are the monsters and strange creatures of the brass screw. And then there are the makers who are the cogs. So you're winning points for your house. It's a little like Hogwarts.
Okay. Now you mentioned monsters. Do we have any monsters around?
Well, we will in a couple weeks, but we also have monsters at the brass screw.
Oh, okay. You're getting ahead of us, but that's fine. We can start to talk about the Haunted Bordello. Now, the event that's coming up this October is actually called the Return of the Haunted Bordello.
Yes.
So it's not the beginning of the Haunted Bordello. Let's talk about the beginning. When was that and where was that?
The early days of the Haunted Bordello. So rough and tumble.
Right.
Here. You know, so downtown had a lot of saloons and, not to slander, but a lot of brothels. So I looked around and went, oh, a Halloween event here would be fantastic. What this town needs is a haunted bordello. Cindy, being the more level-headed
conservative
partner, said, let's not do that right away. Let's let people get to know us. And so, and we were immediately involved. We helped with the chamber. I was a member of the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. We helped with the Victorian Festival, all very respectable, upstanding events. So after a year in 2012, towards October, Cindy thought I'd made a good enough impression that maybe we could risk starting a haunted bordello.
Okay. Do you need a permit or anything to have a haunted bordello?
Well, I should start off with, it's not really a bordello.
Oh, yes. True.
So, we don't have health inspectors, and nobody's particularly concerned about what we're doing because
okay.
It doesn't it's, do.
Yeah. It's but it named is, for.
We only pretend. And at that point, it was all in the old consulate.
Okay.
So it was a guided tour, and each room contained a different story, if you will. So you'd open the door, and you might find a woman in something of dishabille, surrounded by spiders. And a
Ooh.
Poor, she is happy with the spiders, but the poor, unfortunate patron is not happy with the spiders because the spiders have wrapped him all up in spider webs and now he's going to be carried off to, some unfortunate end.
Spider-land.
It's a haunted bordello. So there were ghost stories. Each year had a different theme and we ran for some years. But each room had a different story to tell. And as you progressed through, you saw the history of this year's terrible tale.
Okay. What was one of the themes?
We did Penny Dreadfuls one year, so Penny Dreadfuls were all of those late Victorian horror stories. So, if you will, the vampire tradition or the Living Dead tradition all grew out of these late 19th century tales of terror that were sold on the cheap for a penny a page, Penny Dreadfuls. They would sell these broadsheets, but werewolves... zombies, spider lady. You get this sense of the stories that we now have in the movies also got their origin back in these Penny Dreadfuls.
True. So was it the pandemic that made you stop with the Haunted Bordello, the original one?
It was not, actually. Okay. We started in 2012, and by 2018, I was running out of clever ideas. And every year we would look around at the damage to the house as we took 200 and some people through on two nights. Using a beautiful old house as a stage was taking its toll. So we decided that was probably enough, and we shuttered it. Very happily, it was still on the upswing. People were walking up and asking if it was still happening. Unfortunately, we just didn't have the will to continue at that point. It was time.
And that was
2018, we stopped.
And then, of course, the pandemic, 2020.
It was fortuitous that we were not trying to do it then.
Okay, so, and now we're going to have the return of the Haunted Bordello. And what is that? You already hinted that it's no longer at the old consulate.
It's not. Yeah, so we continue. People still walk up to me and ask if it's happening this year. And it's still my favorite event. So in looking for a new way to do it, we thought we would move downtown. So we were taking multiple venues around downtown, and our participants, our guests, will take guided tours through multiple locations, fabulous locations. I'm really excited about where we're going. And so it's a multiple space walk through downtown Port Townsend, each of them with a portion of the theme that tells a story throughout the night. Complete fantasy, by the way. But none of these buildings were actually bordellos back in the day, but the other half of the buildings downtown probably were.
Right. And so this event is taking place October
25th and 26th.
25th and 26th. And where's the starting location?
It's going to start at Bridget's Loft, which is above the Bazaar Girls downtown.
But you can already buy your tickets online by going to the website?
Yes, hauntedbordello.com.
Okay, that's simple enough. And how much is it going to cost?
Pre-sale tickets are $20 for the full tour. And then we're offering a preferred entry, which is kind of our VIP pass, for $35. And that lets you skip all the lines and know exactly when you're going to show up, and kind of, it's the fast track.
That sounds convenient.
It's nice. We've had long lines in the past, so it's nice, but if you don't do that, it will not reduce your experience. It will let you control if you want to go to another event on Halloween that weekend. Yeah, that'll be the fast pass and
so
cleaner.
In theory, will take about an hour, hour and a half to complete.
It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. This is also guerrilla theater, so it gets built and created by an entire team of people. We're collaborating, and a lot of creativity gets thrown up against the wall, and we see what sticks, and then we evolve it. So we're currently meeting multiple times a week to find out what's going to happen.
And so, once again, we're talking costumes.
Lots of costumes. Some of them very small costumes, mind you. It right. is, after all, a bordello.
So it is X-rated?
Oh, no. Let's say R.
R-rated.
R-rated, okay. Yes. It's 17 and up.
Okay. But there's also a so-called spookeasy.
There is. So we are looking forward to trying something new. We will have the Billy Club. Billy was an ongoing character. And we will have the Billy Club Spookeasy, which will offer tasty beverages for our participants and open to the public.
And that one, of course, is 21 and up.
That indeed is 21 and up.
Okay.
Like, a control board would appreciate my mentioning that.
Yes, yes. And we want to be very clear about that.
Yes.
Also, I think it should also be noted here that this event is not ADA compliant. I don't exactly know how to say that.
True.
So can you explain what...
We're in a variety of historical buildings. Some of them are just not passable. Steep stairs,
right?
Rough curbs. And so it's, if I'll just say to your listeners, if anybody's particularly excited and wants to communicate, please reach out. We'll figure out a way to get you through what we can. But some of it is just very steep, and there aren't elevators in these old buildings.
Right. I think everyone knows that, yep. But it's best to be really upfront about it so that
Absolutely.
There's no question.
Yeah, the old consulate also, it was just all stairs all
yeah.
day.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, but there is an overall theme about bordellos. What is the theme here? What's the story? What's the plot line?
Well, I mean, the overall theme for bordellos in general, I don't think I'll go into for your listening audience.
Right.
But you can look that up. But for our haunted bordello this year, we are coming back because we have larger spaces. We have a conflict between two warring brothels. One is the House of Roses, and they are more opium den and seduction and poisons. And on the other side is the House of the Ravens. And the Ravens are a little bit more harsh. Think talons and claws and beaks. And they are more of a violent cast. Also maybe sending poor unsuspecting patrons off to the Shanghai Man.
Okay. Yes, Shanghai. But do they actually get, you know, the traditional Shanghai is they take these sailors, put them on a ship to China or wherever.
And send them off.
Is that the end game here, or is it something more nefarious?
Oh, no. It seems that these two households are using the power, the blood and life force of these poor Johns to prolong their lives and maintain their beauty. So
the ladies of the night are using the blood of young sailors to make them
live forever.
Oh, live forever.
Forever beautiful.
That sounds astonishing.
It's gruesome. And of course, they've been doing this for centuries. What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Yes, it's hard to say what could go wrong in a scenario like that. Mm. And we should remind our listeners that this is theater, really, and these are actors, and it's don't touch the actors, that kind of thing.
Absolutely not. No, we're very safe. The rules, as everyone walks in, are clearly stated. No one will be touching anyone. But also for my cast and crew, it's very clear that I have three solid rules. This is all for nonprofit. The proceeds go to Olympic Peninsula Steam. So nobody's getting paid. We're just doing this for the love of theater and the spooky joys of Halloween. Second rule is everyone is safe. So anybody who thinks that there's lots of hanky-panky going on is like, no, we're just actors. We're doing a show. This is theater. And the third is that there is no male-on-female violence. Our culture has plenty of that, and I have no interest in doing more of it. So
yes.
Fortunately, I have lots of women and lots of Johns who have signed up for some kind of experience.
Yes.
They get it.
Yes. Okay. And this has multiple locations. I can sort of guess at some of them, like the jail.
Yes.
But all right. I think we've titillated our listeners enough here.
Fantastic locations. Excited.
When I was talking to you the other day, you had a phrase that I really would like to repeat because I thought it really summed things up. You told me that this is a titillating tour of a time that never was.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to tell you a tale. It's a tall tale with some very dark places.
Okay. All right. Well, believe it or not, we're out of time. In closing, aside from thanking you, I just want to note that you still have kept your day job, but now you're working for Google instead of Microsoft.
Indeed.
But thank you very much, and I really look forward to the event. So, in addition to thanking Nathan, I also want to thank Fred Franzen, who is going to be the editor and producer of our show today. It's amazing what a good editor can do in terms of cleaning up our act, and we may sound so much better, and I really appreciate the editing that goes on. I want to remind our listeners, this is a community radio station for and by the people of Jefferson County. We don't get any money from any government authority, so please send your donations. Go to our website. There's a thing, just push it. It says donate now. So keep your radio, if you're old school, tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM, website kptz.org. This is Mary Ann McNellis. I'm the host of Our Town. If you want to listen to earlier shows, their podcast, just go to our webpage, look at the word podcast, hit that, scroll down to the letter O for Our Town, and you'll find dozens of shows. I want to thank Nathan Barnett and look forward to the return of the Haunted Bordello.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production. created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.